the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Nathan, this is it's obviously always difficult to decide on a winning team who is the individual. There's a number of different individuals who we could have gone for as Hurler of the Year, and sometimes it comes down to individual preference, but also it comes down to the quality of the performance week in, week out. It's consistency too.
I think if you're scoring 7 points from play in an All-Ireland final, you've got to be in the running for Hurler of the Year. And that was just backing up what he did in the semi-final. I don't know if they can sort of split. Do they ever split these 50-50, poor old Tom Morrissey? Does he deserve a look in here as well? Because they were the dynamic duo. So I think the second you saw the quality of Hegarty's performance in the final, you knew he was nailed on.
Well, it was the point you made there, going into the final already, people have been talking about the quality of performances as being nearly a shoo-in, which I presume brings its own level of expectation and therefore pressure too.
Yeah, but that was on that entire Limerick team because they were going in as overwhelming favourites. It's a very different scenario to trying to breach that gap from 1973 and all the hype and the pressure. Suddenly, when you're the favourites and you've got to deliver and you're not even getting praise. Remember, going into that final, there were questions about Limerick that they hadn't really hit top gear yet, despite the fact that they were racking up massive scores. So all of that brings its own pressure. So yeah, to go out and produce the quality of performance that they did, and for Hegarty individually to score 7 points, look, it's
not bad. Yeah. Garrod Hegarty, good morning to you. You're Tommy Walsh's Hurler of the Year. How does that feel?
Feels great. Feels great. Suppose we grew up watching that great Kilkenny team that Tommy was involved in, winning All-Irelands every single year, you know, and it's a great honour. It's a great honour coming from such a legend that is Tommy.
I don't know, Garrod, if you could hear exactly what Tommy was saying, but you were mid-flow there, Tommy, about playing on the edge, and it's not you don't even call it hurling on the edge.
No, because the way I grew up was backyard and hurling. There was no referees. There was no dirt. There was nothing like that. You went in as hard as you could to win that ball. 50-50 ball, 60-40 ball. It was in your mind to win that ball. That's the way Garrod plays the game. That's the way that Limerick team plays the game. There's no, I never see dirt in that Limerick team. Never see any dirty belts, any dirty slaps. They go in for that ball. Sometimes, listen, a lad might come off second best. but the intention is to win the ball, is what I'm saying. The intention is to go win that ball. The intention is to get into tackle. Play the game. We all watched the Christy Ring documentary the other day. He loved the Glen because they played the game the way it should be played. Tough and fair. And that's the way Garrod plays the game. That's the way the Limerick team plays the game. And I have nothing but respect for that.
That's good to hear, Garrod.
Yeah, it is. I suppose we do. We pride ourselves on our physicality and our hurling, obviously, as well, you know. But I suppose you have to use the advantages that you have. And that's just the way. That's the way we play the game, you know, good and hard. But it is fair, as Tommy says. And I suppose it worked out for us, obviously, over the last few months.
The skill level this year was off the charts as well. That was the other thing, that it's a tricky game that you're trying to play a lot of the time that requires extreme accuracy and execution under incredible pressure. So you need to have confidence in that skill set while at the same time developing the physicality. That's a difficult balance to get right.
Yeah, I suppose we're lucky that Paul Knark is our coach, and I suppose we're training. I suppose that group now has been together a couple of years with a couple of new lads coming in every year. But Paul is an absolutely incredible coach, and we're lucky to have him. And we just work so hard in it every single night, that playing the ball, passing the hand. And I suppose in the All-Ireland final, watching the match back in the couple of days after the game, our passing was, I thought it was absolutely superb in the final. There was hardly any ball that wasn't going to hand, even from the cornerbacks and fullbacks coming out with the ball. They were pinging ball to hand. And when that works, it was great to see it come off in the All-Ireland final so well, because we worked so hard in it all through the year, and we have been working hard in it so for the last number of years. So it was really satisfying to see it come off so well in the final.
Do you do that at such high intensity of training that it doubles up as a physical session as well as a skill session?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, we wouldn't do much running without the ball at training. It's all incorporated. In fairness, Mikey Kiley came in this year and he's after doing a super job with us in terms of strength and conditioning. And he works obviously with Paul quite closely, and they're always monitoring, I suppose, our running in the drills. And if we do enough running in the drills, I suppose we don't have to go running at the end. That's the little reward that we get for working hard in Paul's drills.
Right, so it's gamified. It's like a night off homework almost if you do well in the early training session.
Yeah.
That's class. What level of pressure did you guys feel under as the season went on?
You know what? When we were in lockdown, I wasn't 100% sure did I want the championship to go ahead or not, because there was so much uncertainty out there as well, or there was so much uncertainty with the pandemic going on. People, you were wondering, would you bring the virus back into your household, into your parents, or could you go meet your grandparents, things like that. But I suppose when we did get back together, it was an absolute blessing, because obviously we went back into a second lockdown then halfway through the championship, and it was a privilege to be able to actually leave your house and go training. And I'm lucky enough that I'm a school teacher that I was able to leave my house to go to school as well. But it was a special couple of months, to be fair. And you know, I said it after the game, it was bittersweet in terms of being on the field after the game, winning Limerick second All-Ireland in a long time, you know, and there was nobody there to see it. Limerick fans have been crying out to see a team winning All-Ireland for a long time, and thankfully we got it in 2018, but there's a lot of people out there that want to see more, and I suppose it was bittersweet that they weren't there with us on the field, but I'm sure we brought a lot of happiness to households around Limerick and a lot of Limerick people around the world over the last number of months.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Tommy, I was listening to one of the Dublin women's footballers, Ciara Trant, talk about how actually winning becomes far more addictive than losing. And so the whole notion of hunger being something that you only have when you've lost isn't actually correct. That we on the outside don't see this, but actually as you acquire things and you acquire titles and you start to get into that winning groove, is that something that you would have experienced as well? And that actually the Kilkenny team became stronger and more determined as you started to win things, as opposed to in the early stages when it was nip and tuck and you were kind of just breaking into the winning mentality?
Yeah, like lads used to ask us the whole time, it was like they had a huge respect for us. How do you keep it going? How do you stay going year after year? And in my mind, they used to always say, how do the lads that are not winning keep it going year after year? Like, we're living the dream. Like, we're up there in Croke Park with 80,000 people every September winning All-Ireland. Like, it's unbelievably addictive. It's a drug. Like, you're getting clapped in the back. Everybody's telling you how great you are. You go to bed at night, you're thinking about the final. You're having a few pints with the lads during the winter, you're talking about the final. All just great, great memories. Then you can't wait to go back training, because I remember Pat Spillane saying that the danger for teams that are winning consistently, say, you know, they win two or three All-Irelands, is that suddenly then everybody wants the glory, the individual glory. So, you know, I thought it was a great lesson, and we learned that early, that we didn't let it kind of, our ambition at the start of the year might be to be the hurler of the year or to be the best player on the field, but it wasn't to win an award. It was just your inner drive, your inner ambition to be the best player on the field. Your first, and the Dublin footballers are the very same. You'd often hear they probably brought to a new level this unselfishness that it's all about the team. But that's the way we felt about it. So it was just getting back on that team every January. That hunger to win the ball, that hunger to win things, I think it's extremely addictive. And yeah, it's much more difficult to do when you're not winning.
Yeah, you can see that coming out in the Limerick team as well. There's one tweet I just want to bring you both at the same time here. It's from Eddie Brennan back in December the 13th. If there's a man to pull the puppy dog innocent face better than our Tommy Walsh, it's Garrod Hegarty. That's also high praise, Garrod.
Yeah, again, another man with many, many All-Ireland medals talking about you. I suppose if you think about it, couple of years ago, this is where we wanted to be. We wanted to be in the conversation of winning All-Irelands, you know. And I suppose it's a lot of hard work over the last number of years has got us to where we are. And as Tommy, listen to Tommy there, I thought it was very interesting just how he was talking about how he says that teams that weren't winning, how do they keep going? And I think it's a great point, because it's just, I remember coming into the panel in 2016. Wayne McNamara, who's now retired, actually said those exact words to me that Tommy said, that it is a drug when you get to Croke Park. when you're in front of 82,000 people playing All-Ireland semi-finals and finals. And I suppose we have seen that we've been lucky enough to get to our last number of years. And it is a drug. It is a drug. But getting to Eddie's point, sure, look, I was listening to Tommy before I came on there about how we play on the edge. We do play on the edge, but I suppose that's just the way it is. And I actually thought Fergal Lorgan refereed again brilliantly last Sunday week, because nobody talked about the referee after the game, which is always a good sign.
Yeah, and they're talking about him at the football game, unfortunately. Tommy, did you practice your puppy dog face? Was that something you'd work at in training with Brian Cody? Is he gone? Have we lost? Oh, we've lost Tommy there, unfortunately. That is a pity. Carole, we had Michael Quinlivan on after the All-Ireland football semi-final, I think it was, and he brought you up unprompted about the quality of footballer you were, because I think it was just after the semi-final hurling. So how much of the benefit did you have from being a dual player as a hurler? Were there aspects of football that you found helped you? Because you obviously played inter-county football at a very young age.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't be where I am today without football. I was lucky enough, when I was 19, John Bruder asked me to come in, and he was training our club team the year before, and he asked me to join the Limerick Senior Footballers. And to be honest, I was absolutely nowhere near, not even an under-21 Limerick Ireland team at the time. So I said, I'd love to, because I was playing senior football with the club, and I said, I'd love to get involved in an inter-county. And it exposed me to the proper strength and condition and the proper what it actually takes to become a good inter-county footballer. And without that exposure, I suppose, early days when I was 19, 20, I absolutely wouldn't be where I am today. So I owe football a lot in terms of where I've got to. But it also changed me in terms of mindset, and it changed me in terms of how you live your life. Like, I suppose, and I'm speaking for a lot of inter-county football teams, like every inter-county football team trains tough. Every single player on an inter-county team trains 5 or 6 times a week. They're looking after themselves in terms of their sleep, nutrition, so on and so forth. And I suppose it opened my eyes really in terms of what it actually takes to be on an inter-county panel. And also, I was lucky enough then, John Kiley then, when I was up to the age under 21, asked me to come in for an under 21 trial. And that's where it all started, I suppose, in 2015 when we won that under 21 at Ireland. But yeah, absolutely, I would not be where I am today without those couple of years at inter-county football. And also Sigerson, I played Fitzgibbon and Sigerson inside Newell. But I played more Sigerson than I did Fitzgibbon, because when I was around that 19, 20 years of age, I was way more focused on my football, you know. So it's interesting how it goes. But I was always more of a hurler. I've been a hurler since talking to your modern father after the last couple of days, and just forward as me when I'm barely able to stand with hurling in my hands. So hurling was always my first love, without a doubt.
Your dad hurled for Limerick, obviously, as well, yeah?
Yeah, he hurled for 10 or 15 years, played in a couple of All-Ireland finals, and I suppose he always says that they won everything there was to win, but they never won the big one, you know. So very satisfying to win a second one in a very short space of time, and I heard a reference again over the last number of days that there's been so many good, fantastic Limerick hurlers that never won one, you know. So to win a couple in such a short space of time is an unbelievable privilege.
Gerald, it's interesting there what you're talking about, being in with the football squad and the differences, because when we're talking about Dublin's dominance, what's often thrown back in other counties is, well, are they as training as hard as the Dublin footballers? And from the outside, you'd look at Limerick and think maybe a huge amount of the resources go into the hurling squad compared to the football. But it sounds like what you're saying, you didn't find a seismic difference between the two squads in terms of preparation?
No, not necessarily, to be honest. Like, I guarantee you, if you were flying the wall in 95% of inter-county panels around the country, you'd see how hard they train. I'd say it's fairly eye-opening to people that don't understand how hard they do actually train. When you're out in Rakhil in November and December, and on a normal season, when you're in your pre-season leading up to the league, and the wind is coming in, or the rain is coming in sideways, and it's freezing cold, and that's a real eye-opener, you know. And the footballers are there alongside us in the field beside us, you know, so they train. I can only speak for the Limerick lads, because I've been lucky enough to be involved with both panels, and there wouldn't be much of a difference in terms of how both panels train, straight up.
I think the problem for football panels around the country is that they don't have 40 lads who are able to commit to that for the whole season, the way the Dubs have actually 60 lads who could do it. And maybe that's where part of that imbalance is coming. The last one for me is, it's obviously a shortened off-season. There won't be that much of the winter nights, hopefully. You might even get some time off when the weather's at its worst, and then you come back for a shortened season again next year. It's not a bad scenario to be in, where you roll straight into 2021.
No, definitely not. this time of year is normally always the worst time of the year in terms of November and December. Once you get to January, you're kind of looking into the start of the league. But obviously, this year was quite different in terms of how short the winter was with championship games over those months. But it's not a bad scenario, no, to be fair. And I suppose we'll go back in a couple. I don't know when we're back. We haven't heard anything, but we'll go back, I'd say, maybe towards mid-January, end of January. I don't know. And you'll have a couple of weeks pre-season, and then you're straight into the league. And once the league starts, they can't do too much in terms of the physical side, you know, because you're leading into games. But yeah, it's ideal, I suppose, in one sense that it's such a short turnaround, but you have to be wary that you do need to take a break when you get it, because even though I wouldn't mind if we went back training, you do know that you do need the break, because you will need it at some stage throughout the year. And you do have, when you get your break, you do absolutely have to take it. I suppose a little nugget of information, Joe O'Connor, who was our strength and conditioning coach for a couple of years with Limerick and was an absolutely brilliant person and brilliant strength and conditioning coach, used to always say to me that if you can't fully switch off, you can't fully switch on, you know, so when you get your break, take it.
That's really interesting, because I don't know if you heard the Bernard Brogan interview with Jack McCaffrey, but Jack McCaffrey just reached a point where it became too much.
Yeah.
And I can see how it would become too much, especially when your team now is going to start getting talked about as one of the all-time great teams, and you've got to actually deliver on the potential, and you'll always feel like, geez, I could do a little bit more. So that's really interesting to hear that kind of at the heart of that there, you have that switch off. And at the same time, also, you have to really enjoy these moments because they're unbelievably special.
Yeah, and actually one thing that I noticed myself this year with the lockdown is that I just stopped worrying about the small things. Like, you know, if you got a bad night's sleep in the lead up to the game or even the night before the game, I used to always be worrying about it throughout the day and worrying about it throughout the week. Will that affect me now in the game at the weekend? But I suppose over the lockdown then, like, you're just thinking to yourself, like, there's so much bigger things in life than to be worrying about little small things, you know. So we do have to be wary. And I suppose Mikey Kiley and the lads, like, you have to trust them that they are going to have you right. And it's a balancing act, because I actually listened to that interview with Jack McCaffrey and I found it incredibly interesting that he was just burnt out. I'd say that he was burnt out. He said it himself. And it's just a bad time to get it, I suppose, when it was in leading up to an All-Ireland final. So as I said, like, when you do get a break, especially this year more than any year, that you have to take it and you have to enjoy yourself, because when you do go back, and I suppose we're probably going into another lockdown, that there's not going to be too much. There's going to be a lot of hard work, you know, over the next couple of months. So we'll take a couple of weeks and relax and enjoy it. But the hard work will start fairly soon again.
Well, look, well deserved. Congrats on absolutely everything you've won. I've no doubt that the award you'll cherish the most is the Off the Ball Stars Hurler of the Year, as chosen by Tommy Walsh.
Yeah, sure. Look, as I said, Tommy, I think it was 9 All-Irelands I saw when I was watching a bit of it there before I came on. Like, we're delighted to have won 2 in the last 3 years, but Tommy has 9, you know, and Henry, I suppose, won 10 as well. And what a team they were, you know, so we'll see. I suppose we'll see what happens over the next couple of months.
Well, that's a target at least. Gerard, thanks a million for joining us. Great stuff. Cheers.
Cheers, lads.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.